Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, back in New Orleans, Louisiana. And if I didn't know that from how darn nice people are, suddenly, unexpectedly, it would be because right after I leave the Louisiana Le Show Dome, I'm going to a video taping session. They don't use tape, but you know what I mean. At the corner of Demosthenes and Phosphor Avenues. Now, New Orleanians know that that's really in Metairie, not in New Orleans proper, but still, the corner of Demosthenes and Phosphor. See what I'm saying? I want to thank everybody who responded to last week's broadcast, the interview with Maria Garzino, the Corps of Engineers whistleblower, who pointed out again this week when the Corps of Engineers was... I know a lot of you don't care about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. In the local newspaper, New Orleans, bragging on running both sets of pumps, and Maria pointed out, no, they didn't. They didn't run the bad pumps, or they didn't run them for very long. So she's still on the case. Ladies and gentlemen, here is measurable, definable progress. We want a change. We're getting it. The color-coded Homeland Security Advisory System may be overhauled, moving from five colors to three. See what I'm saying? Change you can actually see with your eyes. The nation has been at yellow for 3 years. International and domestic flights have been at orange for the same period. Now, a proposal by the Homeland Security Advisory Council says two of the five colors should be removed, with a standard state of affairs being a guarded yellow. I know the feeling. The green low risk of terrorist attacks might get removed altogether. Wow. That's serious. There is currently indifference to the public advisory system, and at worst, there is a disturbing lack of public confidence in the system, the council wrote to DHS Secretary Napolitano. Not Napoleon, Napolitano. The group said the public should feel confident, though, in a new three-color rating system. And here's why. Because, for reasons of public credibility, the scale won't be politicized, and the government should elevate the threat status only when compelled to in the interest of public safety and security. And, of course, three colors will ensure that. Well, now we know why they went to five in the first place. Ladies and gentlemen, who's number one? New information on that. We're number one, really, aren't we? Really? Really? You know, really? We're the best in the world? No, the U.S. was displaced by Switzerland as the world's most competitive economy as a result of the economic thing. The U.S. fell to second position. We're number two. Come on, say it with me now. For the first time since the World Economic Forum began its current index way back in 2004. So there's some history there. The U.S. lost marks for the sophistication of its markets. Interesting. Mine has 400 different kinds of apples. I don't know what the problem is. The loss of efficiency by the world's largest economy, that's us, is another obstacle to a fast recovery. The U.S. slid to ninth place, ranked for the attributes of its markets, a measure of how easy it is to access finance, credit. The United States fell to 106th, close to Albania and Mali. Hey, that's good company. We were 40th last year, but still, the budget deficit moves our grade for economic stability from 66th to 93rd. Well, that's kind of number one, except for 92 guys ahead of us. U.S. still wins marks for its flexible product and labor markets, research and development, and technological advances. Switzerland took the top spot after being ranked third for business sophistication and second for its capacity to innovate. Whole new kind of cuckoo clock, apparently, they came up with over there. Cuckoo clock. Switzerland, of course, was in the recession as much as we were, so we can't blame that. Singapore, Sweden, and Denmark rounded up the top five economies. Singapore, Sweden, and Denmark, ladies and gentlemen. followed by Finland, Germany, Japan, Canada, and the Netherlands. It sounds like the socialists are winning, doesn't it? I mean, and by the way, speaking of which, I was in Amsterdam last week. I know, it was business. And I can really pretty well adjust to all of the cultural differences between even New Orleans and Amsterdam, except for one, that when a gentleman, let's say, you know, not the kind that patronizes gentlemen's clubs, but a gentleman goes into a men's room and prepares to do his business, there's the person who's cleaning the floor in the men's room at that time, and it's happened twice, is a woman. And it's not New York, so she doesn't say this, but her look as a gentleman might stand frozen in mid-whatever, her look says, "What are you looking at?" I don't know. Now they, I read, have a combined private-public healthcare system. So me, I'm going single payer. If private-public means women cleaning up the men's room, I am so... Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the Karma train pulling fast into the station. This is apropos of Sirius Satellite Radio, which as soon as it merged with XM, dumped this program, and good things have happened to them ever since. It says this week it received notice from the NASDAQ stock exchange that its share price has closed below a dollar for 30 consecutive days, which could cause the stock to be delisted. Howard, sell now. And among the companies in the greatest danger of filing for bankruptcy in the coming year, according to a new study by Audit Integrity, SiriusXM. All right. I guess you guys made the right choice. Go ahead on, Mel. And ladies and gentlemen, one way to fix stuff, again, with the change, is just change the name. According to the Washington Post this week, Admiral Mike Mullen, speaking on the loss of momentum in Afghanistan and the whole other thing, began to refer to the Afghanistan-Pakistan policy, which had been introduced as the AFPAC policy, and of course, which was noted here as the AFPAC policy, now beginning to refer to it as the PAC-AF policy. Seriously. So, that's change you can pronounce. Hello, welcome to the show.
I ruined my reputation by the way I make my plans. I've got to roadblock my baby. Bring her home any way I can. Not trying to be no hero. I won't take the law in my hands. Oh no, I've got to roadblock my baby. Bring her home any way I can. Gonna want all the railroad men to put all the trains on strike. Gonna hold up every line till I get my baby back. Not trying to be no hero. I won't take the law in my hands. Oh no, I've got to roadblock. To look out for her name, and when she buys a ticket, I'm gonna hijack all the planes. Not trying to be no hero, I won't take the law in my hand. Oh no, I've got to roadblock my baby, bring her home any way I can. Oh, every law book
I read them from front to back. I'm trying to find a way to bring my baby back. Not trying to be no hero. I won't take the law in my hands. Oh. Trains on strike, gonna hold up every line till I get my baby back. I'm not trying to be no hero. I won't take the law in my hands. Oh no, I've got to roll like my baby, get her back any way I can.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, watch out, wet ankles. I'm Harry Shearer, welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen. It's a movement. The British minister in charge of the 2012 Olympics in London. Uh-oh. Said she would like to see an emerging nation, such as India or South Africa, host the Olympic Games to dispel perception of the Games as being a rich man's club. Wouldn't you like to put a billion rupees into that, Prime Minister? Olympics Minister Tessa Jowell said retaining the Games as a global movement was more important than bankrolling its glitz and glamour to the tune of untold billions of dollars. Countries that have already felt excluded will only feel more isolated by the impact of the worldwide recession, losing out on the irreplaceable premium the Games provide, she said. Speaking of irreplaceable premiums, the cost of the London Olympics has spiraled from an initial estimate of $4 billion to about $15 billion. But it's accelerated the regeneration of a previously run-down area of East London. $16 billion? Sure. It's worth it. The minister said the cost of staging the Olympics should be realistic if the spirit of the movement is to be kept alive and relevant. I hope that in the next 20 years, you could look to South Africa hosting the Olympics. You could look to India hosting the Olympics. These are very important ambitions to keep alive. Jowell told the bidding nations they must let their passions rip. That's from a British government minister. If they want to win. Okay, Chicago, you've been warned. Let them rip. This is not a moment to play safe, she advised. You win if you inspire the members of the IOC and give them ideas and a story about what the Games can do, which is quite different from anything which has ever gone before. Well, they can build a huge stadium, which will be a white elephant like Sydney and Beijing, can't they? Oh, that's been done. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen. It's a movement, and everyone needs one of those. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. News from the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen. It's copyrighted. Why would you ask? Agents of the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, it's now BATFE, are feuding over bomb investigations. Isn't that nice? That makes you feel safe, doesn't it? Almost as safe as a three-color terror alert system. They're racing each other to crime scenes, failing to share information, and refusing to train together. This is from the Justice Department's Inspector General, Glenn Fine. And he says Justice Department bosses have repeatedly failed to fix the problem. this has led to jurisdictional fights in investigations of explosives incidents across the country from Times Square to Arizona on the West Coast. The most recent documented spat came last December when the FBI protested a local prosecutor's request to use Bureau of Alcohol Firearms to investigate a blast that killed a local bomb technician in Woodburn, Oregon. FBI and ATF supervisors tend to deploy their employees to the larger, more sensational explosives incidents, sometimes racing each other to be the first federal agency on the scene and disputing upon arrival which agency should lead the investigation, according to the IG. Such conflicts can delay investigations, undermine federal and local relationships, and may project to local agency responders a disjointed federal response to explosive incidents in their area. We wouldn't want to project that. We wouldn't know anything about disjointed federal response sitting where I'm sitting. Officials in both agencies claim such problems have been resolved, yet the report stated disputes between the FBI and ATF continue to occur. FBI and ATF officials did not immediately comment, nor did a Justice Department spokeswoman. That's reassuring. It means they're taking it seriously. And last spring, the U.S. diplomatic mission in Iraq got a makeover, replacing the scandal-plagued Blackwater with a firm called Triple Canopy. Does that sound reassuring? Triple Canopy. There's three canopies, one for every color in the new... I don't think that was why it was done. The new $1 billion contract cemented Triple Canopy's status as the preeminent provider of private security services in Iraq. But the company's rise to prominence has been marked by questionable weapons death deals, government bungling, and a criminal investigation that was ultimately closed without charges being filed, according to newly released investigative files. Company employees told federal investigators Triple Canopy swapped booze for weapons. It's like food for oil, really, when you think about it. And surplus from U.S. military. They said the company bought guns and other arms on the black market because it's cheaper, babe, okay? Some worried that money was flowing into the hands of insurgents. The criminal investigation began after federal investigators received a tip that Triple Canopy was using stolen cars and captured Iraqi weapons to boost profits on some contracts. Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Investigation, who oversaw the investigation, refused to talk about details, but he said the difficulty in building the criminal case is indicative of the haphazard atmosphere in which billions of dollars of U.S. money was spent in Iraq without oversight. It's unclear if anything the Triple Canopy did was criminal, but it was symptomatic of the chaos that prevailed at the time, Bowen said. It's another example of contracting gone wrong. Triple Canopy officials said the firm had done nothing wrong. They did acknowledge buying weapons in Iraq when they were unable to import U.S. guns, but the company's CEO until recently said, before retiring, the firm had taken every precaution to ensure that no money wound up in insurgents' hands. Dyeing their fingers purple? No, I don't think that was one of the precautions. News from Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. One of the chief villains, as the administration outlines its case for healthcare reform, is the pharmaceutical industry, the drug companies. And in the last couple of weeks, Pfizer, a drug company so big it has a silent P in its name, agreed to pay a $2.3 billion fine to settle civil and criminal allegations that it had allegedly marketed its painkiller Bextra. Bextra. Who came up with that name? Well, it's like extra with a B. The extra B is for extra wee. Bextra has been withdrawn. Oh, well, maybe invite some friends over. Oh, I see. It was the largest healthcare fraud settlement and the largest criminal fine of any kind ever. The largest criminal fine of any kind ever, just paid by Pfizer. The investigations began and ended during the Bush administration. Top Obama administration officials celebrated the settlement, thanking each other for resolving it and promising more crackdowns. Pfizer's general counsel said that Pfizer has reformed. The reasons to trust Pfizer, because as I have walked the halls at Pfizer, you would see that the vast majority of our employees spend their lives dedicated to bringing truly important medications to patients and physicians in an appropriate manner. Amy Schulman. Did I say Andy? Meant Amy, she said. The government charged that executives and sales representatives throughout Pfizer's ranks planned and executed schemes to illegally market not only Bextra, but also Geodon, an antipsychotic, Zyvox, an antibiotic, and Lyrica, which treats nerve pain. Oh, I thought it treated, people couldn't remember the words. Lyrica. While the government said the fine was a record sum, the $2.3 billion fine amounts to less than 3 weeks of Pfizer's sales. The activities occurred while Pfizer was in the midst of resolving allegations that it illegally marketed Neurontin, an epilepsy drug for which the company in 2004 paid a $430 million fine and signed a corporate integrity agreement, a promise to behave. And that's as good as this paper right here that I'm hitting with my other hand. You can take that to the bank. Unfortunately, the bank is closed. A former Pfizer sales rep whose complaint helped prompt the government's Bextra case, well, you can read all about it, Bextra, said the company managers told him and others to dismiss concerns about the Neurontin case while pushing them to undertake similar illegal efforts on behalf of Bextra. The whole culture of Pfizer is driven by sales, and if you didn't sell drugs illegally, you were not seen as a team player, said the man, John Kupchinski, whose personal share of the Pfizer settlement will exceed $50 million. Altogether, six whistleblowers will collect $102 million from the federal share of the settlement. Consumers should ask their doctors whether the medication being prescribed is FDA-approved for their condition, said the editor of Consumer Reports' Best Buy Drugs. Almost every major drug maker has been accused in recent years of giving kickbacks to doctors or short-changing federal programs. Prosecutors say they're so alarmed by the growing criminality in the pharmaceutical industry they had begun increasing fines into the billions of dollars and would more vigorously prosecute doctors as well. Bextra was approved in 2001 by the FDA to treat arthritis and menstrual cramps. The drug was not approved for the treatment of acute pain, nor was it shown to be any more powerful than ibuprofen. But Pfizer instructed its sales reps to tell doctors that the drug could be used to treat acute and surgical pain at doses well above those approved, even though the drug's dangers, kidney, skin, and heart risks, increased with the dose. The drug was withdrawn in 2005 because of its risks to the heart and the skin. The aggressive marketing tactics Pfizer was accused of, among others, Pfizer invited doctors to consultant meetings, many in resort locations. That's a coincidence. They were just available. Attendees' expenses were paid. They received a fee just for being there. Such weekend getaways for doctors are still common throughout the drug and medical device industries. So, and to its credit, Pfizer has promised to not engage in those activities, but instead to develop promising new medications.
I thought just because I was eating right and getting plenty of exercise, my mind and body would retain their youthful vigor and innocence. But then my doctor told me I was getting age-related skepticemia, a chronic inability to absorb and believe messages about products that might be able to help me. What's more, he said it gets worse as I get older. That's when he told me about once-a-month Believia. He said it reestablishes brain pathways that aid in credulity. And unlike other medications which have to be taken daily, Believia does its work with just one pill a month. I can handle that.
Do not use or handle Believia if you're operating machinery, becoming pregnant, or operating pregnancy machinery. Common side effects include headache, dizziness, memory loss, temporary night blindness, and chronic gullibility. Ask your doctor if Believia is right for you. And believe him.
I have this one life to live, and I don't want to miss any products that could help make that life stronger, better, or just more expensive. That's why I'm relying on once a month Bolivia, so the message gets through.
So I told him that he'd better shut his mouth and do his job like a man. And he answered, "Listen, Father, I will never kill another. He thinks he's better than his brother that died. What the hell does he think he's doing to his father who brought him up right? Take your place on the great Mandela as it moves through your brief moment of time. Win or lose now, you must choose now. And if you lose, you're only losing your life." Tell the jailer not to bother with his meal of bread and water today. He is fasting till the killing's over. He's a martyr, he thinks he's a prophet, but he's a coward. He's just playing a game. He can't do it, he can't change it. It's been going on for 10,000 years. Take your place on the great Mandela as it moves through your brief moment of time. Win or lose now, you must choose now. And if you lose, you're only losing your life. Tell the people they are safe now. Hunger stopped him, he lies still in his cell. Has gagged his accusations. We are free now. We can kill.
This is Le Show. And on a completely different subject, ladies and gentlemen, we are now told that Admiral Mike Mullen, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says that we're losing the momentum in Afghanistan. which is strange because I didn't know we had it. I totally missed that period. I was sleeping or, I don't know, watching hoops or something. So we've lost the momentum. The report now is that he's ready to press the send button on a message asking for more troops, and the Obama administration has reportedly said, hold off on that just one brief month or so, General, before we have to do that. And meanwhile, even though we're digging in to year 8 of a land war in Afghanistan, because the history of that idea has been so good, Al-Qaeda is, well, we knew had moved over to Pakistan, but it's right next door, you know? You could. And this week, the Independent newspaper reported that the United States had killed a top Al-Qaeda leader. Not in Afghanistan. Not in Pakistan. Where is he? He's in Somalia, ladies and gentlemen. They've moved to Somalia. Because that's a failed state. That's a groovy failed state. That, by the way, is where Osama bin Laden was before the United States forced him out. And he went to Afghanistan. Is there a circular thing happening? I don't know. Anyway, maybe their idea is just to get us bogged down in some land wars, and then they just go skedaddling around. Just ask it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
An anchor from a Fox News affiliate in New York City apologized this week for accidentally dropping the F-bomb on the air earlier this week while bantering with the weatherman. Why don't they just stop bantering? No. No, they're not going to do that. That would be radical. He told the weatherman to keep effing that chicken. Really? The Wednesday night gaffe of Ernie Anastas, news anchor for WNYW, Fox 5, in New York, happened when he chided meteorologist Nick Gregory, that's a real name, saying, quote, "It takes a tough man to make a tender forecast." When Gregory responded with a good-natured laugh, and why wouldn't he, Anastas added the now-famous rejoinder, he most likely intended to say, keep plucking that chicken, because it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken was a well-known slogan of a New York chicken company for years with their television commercials. You see what I'm saying? Anastas then carried on with the newscast as if nothing had occurred, but the utterance left co-anchor Dari Alexander saucer-eyed. Anastas apologized. Oh, he's an Emmy Award-winning anchor. He's got an Emmy. Apologized on the air on Thursday. I misspoke during last night's broadcast, he said just before a commercial break. I apologize for my remarks to anyone who may have been offended. Now this. Management said, we're disappointed with Ernie's comment on the air last night. You really don't want disappointed station management. You never want that. Dateline Denver, a Colorado state senator has apologized for suggestive remarks he made about the chairwoman of a legislative committee earlier this month. Republican Senator Sean Mitchell said Friday his remarks about Democratic Senator Morgan Carroll were inappropriate and unprofessional. Mitchell says he was trying to make a witness feel comfortable when he said that when he's nervous about testifying before a committee, quote, I relieve that by imagining the chairwoman in her underwear, unquote. Carol told Mitchell she accepted the apology and liked to imagine him in a trench coat. No, she didn't say that. Dateline Ottawa, Canada. Canada Health Minister Leona Aglukkaq. I'm sorry. Aglukkaq. A-G-L-U-K-K-A-Q. You pronounce it. There you go. Called the delivery of body bags to Aborigines as part of Ottawa's influenza AH1N1, swine flu to us, pandemic kit, unacceptable, insensitive, and offensive. She apologized for the incident, adding that as a native Canadian, she took offense at the incident. Aglukkaq ordered a thorough investigation on why body bags were sent to native communities. The Wasagamic First Nations Reserve, that's an Indian reservation in our language, got at least 30 body bags. Ottawa sent the H1N1 kits in response to requests for Aborigine communities to help them prepare for a possible second but stronger wave of swine flu pandemic. They're sorry. MSNBC reporter Brian Moore was told to get out of the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. by unnamed attendees. He was reporting live when the incident occurred Friday. He was told by attendees to, quote, get out of here. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, organizer of the conference, later apologized to Moore and told the crowd that reporters are invited guests and are reporting from a designated place on the floor. A Fox News reporter was also harassed by unnamed individuals, so at least the harassers are being fair and balanced. A former assistant director of Christian-based sports and adventure camps in Missouri. Hey, I'm in. No, I mean, sounds good, doesn't it? Christian-based sports and adventure camps? Don't you want to sign up? No? Be that way. Anyway, I'm over here for a minute. And now I'm back. An assistant director, former assistant director of those camps that are popular with Oklahomans, is accused of, well, what do you think? Committing lewd acts with strange boys, teenage boys. Peter Newman is charged in Missouri with second-degree statutory sodomy. Well, anyway, he's accused of those things. He worked from 1999 until June for Kanakuk Camps, Christian-based sports and adventure camps in Branson and Lampy, Missouri, for boys and girls ages 7 to 18. He surrendered to authorities this week. Authorities say he confessed to his sex crimes, and apologized in an 8-page letter to camp owner Joe White. He reportedly went swimming, played nighttime basketball, and conducted hot tub Bible studies in the nude with an untold number of teenage male campers. He was fired in June. Oh, God, no, just the beginning of hot tub Bible study season. He did apologize. He groomed his victims over time by hanging out and meeting their parents and thereby gaining their trust. He also hosted sleepovers and sent letters and emails to teenage boys. He also held nude one-on-one Bible study sessions in his home, hot tub, where the sexual assaults occurred. I didn't know they were nude. You don't have to be nude to be in a hot tub, do you? Bank of America officials publicly apologized this week for any misunderstandings following the bank's removal of American flags planted outside a branch in Gaffney, South Carolina, before a military procession to honor a fallen Marine. The bank eventually replaced the flags along the boulevard. The former Gaffney High football player died in a military hospital in Germany. The branch manager told her, Brenda Earle was planning to honor the Marine. Now, she says, Earls, she says the branch manager told her it violated company policy to plant flags in front of the banking center. This is in South Carolina, where they put Confederate flags on cake. I'm just overwhelmed, Earls said. I would never have thought in a little town in America that we would have this kind of attitude. The manager told her it was company policy not to allow flags on bank property because some of our customers might not appreciate it, Earls said. How much federal money has Bank of America taken? The officials said the manager misinterpreted the company's policy, which is to display American flags according to federal guidelines, and they issued a public apology. We want to ensure the community knows how deeply proud we are of the men and women. The bank does fly the American flag at our locations throughout the country, and flags were displayed in front of our banking center in Gaffney the evening prior to our dedicated Marine returning home, said the statement. We deeply apologize for any misunderstandings. And finally, a former Montgomery County, Maryland English teacher was sentenced to 6 months in jail for distributing cocaine to a student. Like they need that. During his sentencing hearing, Teresa Duarte apologized to the high school community for the embarrassment caused by the crime, said her attorney. She was once dubbed the coolest woman alive by students who put together a yearbook. Now she's too cool for school. Literally. The apology to the week, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
When I was a single girl, dressed in clothes of fine, now I am a married girl, go right.
single girl again. Wish I was a single girl again. When I was a single girl, used to go to the store and buy. Now I am a married girl, just rock that cradle and cry. Wish I was a single girl again. Wish I was a single girl again. When a fella comes a-courting you and sits you on his knee, keep your eye upon the sparrow who flits from tree to tree. And you'll never wish you were a single girl like me. You'll never wish you were a single girl like me. Wish I was a single girl again.
The new face of reality. What the upcoming season has to offer.
Who else but Inside Extra Access tonight? For mid-September 2009.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo, now drinking responsibly.
Reality shows are here to stay. And when this season's crop of the R-bombs drop, they'll be more explosive than ever. Maybe the most newsworthy is Kanye West is so sorry from veteran reality show developers EWW Entertainment. Executive producer Jonathan Punt gives us an exclusive description of the premise.
We know and love Kanye as an out-of-control character at award shows and other public events, so he must be even more out of control in his private life. If he does things he has to apologize for on stage, imagine how sorry his everyday life makes him. It was an instant sell. I mean, head spinning. The network said, "We want this show last week."
Hip-hop superstar Kanye West is followed by cameras as he goes about his daily routine, insulting limo drivers and hotel staff, and in one memorable scene, a personal shopper at Armani.
I think you're going to love this. Classic blazer styling. Wool made exclusively from Michael Jackson's llamas.
Man, get that shit out of my face. That disrespect to dead genius. It smells like my grandma's butthole, and it's ugly. You're a punk.
Minute walks out of the store. We catch up with him, get an apology from Kanye. In this case, very heartfelt apology. A B crew relays the audio of that to the personal shopper. Kanye ends up accepting the jacket as a gift. And before you can say slow-mo, we've got a whole episode, which if it doesn't win the reality show Emmys next year, you can be sure Kanye will have something to say about it at the event. We'll make sure of that.
Jonathan Punk says the contrast between Kanye West's swaggering onstage persona and the contrition of the young man as he encounters the day-to-day challenges of being famous is what gives the show an emotional wallop. As in this scene, where he fires his personal assistant.
I told you, the subwoofer goes under the couch.
Well,
get out of here, bitch! You so fired!
It just kept bumping into the spring.
What?
It couldn't fit under the springs.
Hey, I'm sorry about that. I shouldn't have called you a bitch. I know that's not right. I know you're just trying to do your job. But you're still gone.
Kanye West is So Sorry starts on the E! Network shortly after last week.
The competition show has become as much a staple of reality TV as product placement. And I'll drink a Coke to that. But a new kind of competition show is pushing to the front of the crowd this fall. So You Think You've Got Cancer. Fox reality executive Pete Singlethorne came up with the idea while taking his own sister to chemotherapy.
So I'm sitting in the waiting room. And either I can watch Judge Judy, or I can do something creative. I'm seeing all these different kinds of patients. Sure, there are older folks, but there are younger people there, too. And that's what really turned on the whole lighting truss for me. Because we're all in competition for the best medical care, right? So why not show young, attractive, yes, sexy people competing for the best cancer care on the planet? Once I thought of it, it seemed like a no-brainer.
Okay, contestants, this is the insurance round. You gotta fill out all the required forms while floating in ice-cold water. The slowest two of you will go to the back of the waiting line. And let's get covered!
Ryan Seacrest heard the pitch, saw the demo tape, and he said, "Pete, I'm too busy to breathe, but I gotta do this show." That tells you something.
But does Pete think there's anything exploitive about subjecting cancer patients to this kind of competition?
One thing we know from our staff psychologist is that cancer patients don't like to feel cut off from the rest of society. You know, being part of this show is like the opposite pole from that. They all get free Coca-Cola for life. Plus, we feel we're performing a service by showing the audience that not all cancer patients are elderly. A lot of them are young and attractive and sexy. That helps bring us all together. And it happens to be in the sweet spot of our demo. So, you know, win-win.
So You Think You've Got Cancer premieres Christmas week on the Fox Reality Channel.
That wraps it for this edition, but Inside Extra Access tonight comes rocking back tomorrow with the results of our latest IEAT Twitter poll.
We asked you which Anderson Cooper look you like better, suit or black t-shirt, and the results will be keeping you honest.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
Now this.
Well, you've seen our ads on your TV, and they always start with the big word free. 'Cause a credit report could have saved my skin, could have kept me from taking it right on the chin. You know, I thought my credit was A-OK. A free credit report would have saved the day. Now my girlfriend's out with another dude, and I'm left with my ex and an attitude. Should have gone to freecreditreport.net. The reports aren't really free just yet. You'll be in for a big surprise, you bet, at freecreditreport.net. You know the website's cool and the offer's ace. The conditions never are right in your face. So you sign right up and it's not too long before you're paying me to sing this song. Now my girlfriend's back 'cause I'm living the life, cutting my lobsters with a silver knife. You know the print's so fine and it's down so low. Who knew free could lead to so much dough? I'll see you at freecreditreport.net. You're better off at racetracks with a $2 bet. You'll be sorry we electronically met when you go to freecreditreport.net.
Offer applies only to Sandoz.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
No, you didn't hear anything. Ladies and gentlemen, cars running on sugarcane ethanol can produce as many harmful pollutants as those using ordinary gasoline. This according to a study published by Brazil's Environment Ministry. It didn't even count carbon dioxide emissions. We want to make sure customers are aware of pollutant emissions when they buy a car, says Environment Minister Carlos Mink. Right then. The study ranked emissions based on a scale of green grades that measured three pollutant gases that do not produce climate change but do affect the health of a country's population. Well, it doesn't belong in this department, this award-winning department. UK scientists have warned that UN negotiations aimed at tackling climate change are based on substantial underestimates of what it will cost to adapt to the impacts of climate change. Consensus of scientists regarding global warming say that the real costs of adaptation to climate change are likely to be 2 to 3 times greater than the estimates made by the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. That's according to these new researchers reported in Science Daily. They add costs will be even more when the full range of climate impacts on human activities is considered. Well, then let's give up. The UN has estimated annual global costs of adapting to climate change to be $40 to $170 billion, or the cost about 3 Olympic Games a year. Now, see, that sounds like a good idea to me. 3 Olympics a year. I mean, just to make Dick Ebersol happy. But the report's authors say that these estimates were produced too quickly, okay, 5 Olympics a year then, and did not include key sectors such as energy, manufacturing, retailing, mining, tourism, and ecosystems. Well, what was left? Dr. Berry led the work on estimating the cost of protecting ecosystems and the services they can provide for human society, which were excluded from the UN estimate. She found that this is an important source of underestimation, will cost over $350 billion, including both protected and non-protected areas. The costs of adaptation for ecosystems are potentially huge, the largest of any sector, she says. This is not only because she's by boy Dr. Pam Berry from Oxford, not only because of the projected future losses of species, but also because of the immense value of ecosystems for human health and well-being through the provision of food, fuel, and fiber. The worrying feature is that our report has identified how little is known about this, the biggest elephant in the room. You mean there's more than one elephant in the room? I got to get out of here. Even worse, uncertainty is leading to its omission from the overall figures, which will compound the underestimate. The other studies' findings, water, the UN estimate of $11 billion included costs, excluded costs of adapting to floods, and assumes no cost for transferring water within nations from surplus areas to areas of deficit. The underestimate could be substantial. Health, the UN assessed only malaria, diarrhea, and malnutrition and excluded developed nations in coming to a figure of $5 billion. This may cover only 30 to 50% of the global total disease impact of climate change. And there's more infrastructure, coastal zones, and more in Science Daily. The average world ocean temperature from June through August was the warmest since 1880 for any northern hemisphere summer. This from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. The summer ocean surface temperature was 62.5 degrees. Well, it's still too cold to swim, which is 1.04 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. The land and ocean surface temperature together was 61.2 degrees, the third warmest on record. Physicists at the University of Toronto have discovered that changes in the Earth's ozone layer due to climate change will reduce the amount of ultraviolet rays in northern high-latitude regions such as Siberia, Scandinavia, and northern Canada. They'll be more depressed. Other regions of the Earth, such as the tropics and Antarctica, will instead face increasing levels of UV radiation. More sunscreen. Climate change is an established fact, but scientists are only just beginning to understand its regional manifestations, says Michaela Haglin, a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Physics and the lead author of the study published in Nature Geoscience. Using a sophisticated computer model, and I love them. They're so thin. Haglin and U of T, University of Toronto physicist Theodore Shepard determined that 21st century climate change will alter atmospheric circulation, increasing the flux of ozone from the upper to the lower atmosphere and shifting the distribution of ozone within the upper atmosphere. You heard it here first. And the Arctic sea ice cover appears to have reached its minimum extent of the year, the third lowest recorded since satellites began measuring sea ice extent in 1979, according to the University of Colorado. Finally, the world faces a compounding series of crises driven by human activity, which existing governments and institutions are increasingly powerless to cope with, according to a group of eminent environmental scientists and economists, writing in the journal Science. The researchers say the nations alone are unable to resolve the sorts of planet-wide challenges now arising. See, it is a one-worlder conspiracy after all. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I'll be okay. I'm over here on the floor. The show farewell to Mary Travers, who, after all, was babysitter to one of my close friends. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over this same bunch of things, like NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of your computer or via the internet. Live and archive whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com, two different locations for you. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And available on this station that you're listening to now. And it'd be just like all whistleblowers sharing in the millions. If you'd agree to be with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And a tip of the show chapeau to... And you're going to have to tell me your name again, because in the 3 minutes since you told me, I forgot it.
Farrah. Hudkins.
Farrah Hudkins. Thank you, Farrah, for helping to make today's program possible. Playlists of the music heard on this broadcast and the email address for this broadcast, just part of the potpourri of digital goodies available at the always good harryshear.com. And if you really care, I'm at LeTwits, LeTwits. At Twitter. I'm sorry. Had to do it. I'll see you at the corner of Demosthenes and Phosphor in about 20 minutes. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.